Blake or...
Hello, and welcome to the Saladcast. On Sunday, the 9th of February, 2025, I'm your host, Dan Train. Joining me today is Zachary Burgess.
Me.
And Robert Kemp.
And I.
Me and I.
Is that correct grammar?
Probably not.
Me and I, if you were to say it that way, if you're being having a very self-centered monologue.
I always get that one wrong. That's one of those ones where I overcorrect, you know.
What, using I instead of me?
Yeah.
Yeah, because most things... isn't the correct way is, like, generally if you should end "and I," right? If you're talking about multiple people, including yourself.
I can't remember the rule. Do you know it, Zach?
I think saying, like, "me and Zach went to here" is wrong, right? It should be "Zach and I went to here."
Yeah, right? That sounds right. That sounds right.
Things Rob has learned from watching Scott Pilgrim a bunch.
Yeah, I forgot that, didn't I? I guess I am learning.
I think if it's like, if it was just you, it's like, "I went to that place."
Mm. Well, yeah, because you would say "me went to that place." Like,
yeah, you wouldn't say "me went to that place." So I think that's the rule. If you add someone, it doesn't change, but you can still say "I."
Unless you want to sound a bit Jar Jar.
Yes.
"Misa went to convenience store."
You're going to add "Misa." Obi-Wan and Isa.
Obi-Wan opened the Isa.
Correct grammar. He just adds "sir" on the end of everything.
If he must be... Is he making money if he's like Obi-Wan and Isa?
Well, maybe he's saving money.
Obi-Wan and Isa. Make bucks.
Make buku dollar.
Tax-free, 20,000, whatever they are on Naboo bucks.
Just credits, isn't it? It's just credits.
Galactic credits. Well, that was the whole problem. The galactic credits, they wanted something more real. Right?
Galactic credits. Wasn't Naboo like kind of backwaters, though? So was it weird that they had galactic credits to start with?
Well, that was on Tatooine by that point.
Well, yeah, I suppose that they still had galactic credits, which they couldn't use on Tatooine because Tatooine was like even more backwaters.
Yeah, presumably they were like the royal treasury credits and not like the Jedi had a bunch of credits from Coruscant or something. Maybe they have a stipend for their mission or whatever, the Jedi. Well, you wouldn't think, they don't seem like they'd be the type to care about
money
yeah, or like sure. material stuff,
because they just mind trick everyone into giving them shit for free usually. Yeah, exactly. But then you come across a whatever the Watto species is, like, I've already forgotten.
Toydarian. I don't know why. Yes, I know this.
It's like anything, whatever you're doing, you always need some capital. Gotta pay someone something, right?
Why do all the unmind controllable species hang out on Tatooine? It's like Toydarians and Huts. You can't touch them.
It's true. You'd think you want to hang out where there was a concentration of people trying to mind trick you, like, so that you could. But I don't know.
Yeah, they could just walk into Coruscant and take over because the Jedi was going to stop them.
It's true. But even the Emperor couldn't stop them.
Surely at that point they just get stabbed.
Sure.
Get lightsaber.
Yes. I think I've seen clips. I haven't actually watched it, but I think there are episodes of the Clone Wars cartoon CGI where that Toydarian race have a military and stuff. And like,
they're all paratroopers.
Yeah, they're all paratroopers. Paratrooper.
Every time.
Do you think Gungans or the Gungans and the Naboo have the same currency? Do you think?
Probably not.
Do you think the Gungans use galactic credits?
No,
probably
I wouldn't have thought so.
They use Gunge.
They probably just use those energy ball things as currency.
How much do you think that bongo was worth that he gave to them for the trip through the planet core?
Yeah. That seems like a bad investment in general. Unless you were like planning on salvaging whatever was left.
Well, there's always a bigger fish.
Maybe that's the plan. Get them to lure the fish to eat each other, and then you just get a bit shit out of meat.
Right. Just meat from the
just
giant.
Go clean it up afterwards.
Is it like a trade quest? got to trade up.
Yeah, trade the submarine for a half-eaten fish corpse. Giant fish corpse.
Boss Nass's like whaling fleets were like trailing them or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to see what Jar Jar was going to do.
That's probably what their currency is. Like whale meat. Fat.
Whale meat. Okay. It's basically Avatar 2.
Yeah.
In the middle of... Did you guys see that?
Way of Water. Yeah, I've seen Way of Water.
Yeah.
I can't really remember a lot of it.
You remember it had whaling in it.
Yeah.
On another planet for some reason.
Yeah, that was kind of one of its core plots, right? That was the whole reason they wanted to up this village or something to get their psychic whale friends
so that
give them a stabbing.
Could extract its brain juice.
Yeah, some sort of brain juice. Did they describe what the brain juice could do? I can't remember.
Yeah, they said briefly in one line that it like makes you live forever or something. It's like what's it called?
Unobtainium.
Well, yes. No, I mean, that is literally just
the fountain of youth, right? Unobtainium did something else, didn't it?
Levitated, right?
Well, yeah. Levitating, right? This whale brain juice is like the fountain of youth.
But only for humans, though, right?
Like, yeah, for some reason.
Like, the natives can't exploit this.
Well, did they try? Did the natives try? Is that what it is?
They never actually killed a whale before the humans said no.
Well, they love the whales.
Well, they just never thought to eat the brain juice.
How did the humans discover
because
whale humans brain juice?
Process anything into food at a certain point.
I guess so.
Well, presumably they...
But how did they find out what it was doing is the real question. Like, did they start eating this like 70 years ago and they're like, why am I still alive?
Someone reached for their orange juice and then realised it's like, oh crap, that's the brain juice. I just drank it. And I'm alive somehow. In fact, I feel more alive. What's that about? I've de-aged somehow. Maybe they became kids. You know, some visible de-aging occurred.
Well, that's not the same as immortality.
Oh, no, it's not.
What do you think? What's going to be the big theme of Avatar 3 if he's done fucking
fire, isn't it?
Trees and he's done whales?
Well, it was mining and whaling. So, like...
mining, yeah.
Yeah, I forget what the subtitle is, but I think the next one is fire-related.
But what sort of fire? Are we talking volcanoes or literally fire?
I mean, it's got to be, right? Volcanic in some way. Well, they can't set the entire thing in a volcano, can they? Like, they set Way of Water, the entire thing in the ocean, which seems more plausible, but...
It could just be a volcanic badlands kind of area, like less trees and shit.
Well, most of the planet might have been burnt by the humans by that point, but...
Yeah, but that's not a good thing, right? The thing that you've got to protect has got to be the thing that is in the name of the movie.
It's just called Fire and Ash, the third one.
Well, maybe it is going to be like everything is fucked.
It's out by the end of this year.
Really?
Mm.
Another Christmas, sit there for 3.5 hours and then forget everything.
Yeah.
Experience. Okay, on to that one.
I think, they're just... Way of Water is one hell of a technical achievement. There's no doubt about it. It's just not as fun as Avatar 1 was. Like, I can rewatch Avatar 1 quite happily. Like, I don't know that I would want to go back and watch Way of Water again. It was fine.
I kind of think they're both fine. I don't really see.
Avatar 1 kind of felt like, okay, yeah, it's a technical advancement. I saw it in 3D in the cinema, and that was cool, right? Because it was one that might still be the best 3D. I don't know. Because it was done properly. I don't know. It sort of felt like, I remember at the time thinking, it's like, oh, this is a return to the good action film, right? And to the sort of old school, like, we just made a pure action film. I guess it wasn't a pure action film. No. It had an awful lot of downtime, but it had some of that DNA in it. I suppose that was before also I got into Fast and Furious, probably.
Right. I mean, from the guy who made fucking Terminator and Aliens, it's not like the most pulse-pounding action film, is it? And Terminator 2.
And Titanic.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's less cool.
It's got quite a lot of action in it, considering.
But... Well, it's all backloaded, isn't it? Yeah, you have to get through the first half of Titanic and then the cool shit happens.
Very cool.
Ice cold. Tell you what else I've been watching.
What's yep, that? As is traditional.
I've been watching that season. I got around to properly watching most of season 2 of Arcane.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hadn't really started on that yet. And it's like, could it possibly live up to the hype of season 1? Could it possibly deliver? No. Is my opinion. Like, it's
okay.
It's still pretty good, but it's messy. It's like Pirates of the Caribbean 2. Like, okay, maybe not that messy, but I'm having a slightly hard time with it because it feels like they wanted to tell an awful lot in not a lot of episodes. There's an awful lot, like it jumps from here to here to here to here. Sometimes and there's an awful lot of episodes where you just sort of have, well, that happened kind of, but no real rhyme or reason necessarily to it. It's like, it's flowing too fast. There's some good ideas in there and there's some madness and some insanity and I can get behind that sometimes, but it's just like, there's too much like, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know why this character is doing this thing. I don't know why that has happened to this person. And some of that lingers for a really long time whilst some semblance of other plot attempts to barrel its way forward. I think they needed to slow this down. I guess they didn't have the green light to do it, which is why they mushed it all up into this second season. But it feels like this second season should have been 2 seasons.
Too much plot.
Yeah, too much.
Stuck into it. That's interesting, given that it was such a success. You'd think they'd give them all the time they needed.
Yeah.
Know? But they have decided they didn't want to do more than 2, right?
Yeah, I think this is a studio decision. Or I don't know if it was a studio decision or a Riot decision. One of the two. But yeah, they just didn't. I assume it's expensive to make. Because it still looks beautiful. I can't take that away from them. The production
but that
values.
Doesn't matter if enough people are watching it. I mean, it's got to be it must be a profitable enterprise.
Yeah, indeed. I saw a lot of people talking about how there's an increase in time skips as well, which I don't think helps. Like, I think there's a bunch of the first few episodes start with a time skip. And they have a tendency to associate any kind of time skip with a montage. That's not always that they do. They'll choose a different art style from the main art style to present that in, and do it to some contemporary music over the top. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. It's kind of the risk, I suppose, of using that as a crutch. It's like, oh, we're doing another one, are we? Oh, okay. We've got some modern Linkin Park in this link, have we? Okay, that's interesting. Did you know Linkin Park are back?
I did know that.
Yeah, got a new singer.
You do.
Because they had to.
Yes, as all of those bands of that age have, pretty much.
Well, they didn't really have a choice because, you know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I saw them live 2 weeks before they lost their...
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That must have been an interesting show, like in context, in the context we now have. I like Linkin Park. I got no beef for them, and also their new stuff's pretty good as well. I don't have a problem with that, but it was just sort of a slightly weird. Is that Linkin Park in the background of this? It's weird. It's weird. Anyway, yeah, I'm tinging it with disappointment in my description here, Rob review, but it's still kind of hard to not be hooked. It's because it is just so very nice to look at, and I'm pretty invested from the first season. I wonder if it would have helped to have gone into just rewatched the first season and like binged that and this in one go. Rather, maybe it's designed for binging like a film where maybe you don't care. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it'd be a long
time. It seems to
film,
be the way with, because you know, Squid Game season 2 is really half a season, right? So you have to, people are saying you might as well wait until it's a finished season.
Oh, I didn't realize they were releasing it like that.
Well, there's been a season this year for Squid Game, right?
Yeah.
But it feels like half a season, basically.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, yeah. I knew after season one that they had greenlit two seasons. I knew that had been done, yeah. Right? So,
but the first of those seasons is out
right
now, I believe, and it apparently feels like half a season.
Mm. I do want to get around to watching that. I did enjoy first season.
But maybe it's worth waiting a minute.
Yeah, maybe.
Two and three.
We shall see. I still like it a lot. And nothing can take away what the first season was, I suppose. But the problem is the first season wasn't the whole story, right? It's a little bit... And so you've got to finish it. If you're going to watch Arcane, you've got to finish it, really. You can't just stop. Not all roses, but I still like it a lot. There's like three characters like who are kind of important in the first season that you see for like half an episode and then they've literally disappeared. Literally. Like they've gone. Like that was actually part of the plot that they've just gone. And it's like, wait, what? It's like, is something going to happen with him? Presumably, yes, but it's going to get wrapped up in a really unsatisfying and rapid way. That's my worry. Like, it's all just going to be like, yep, and we're done kind of thing. Here's a neat little bow around everything. Still managed to deliver a pretty good gut punch moment, though. I mean, that was the highlight from the first season, but there's another one here. It doesn't hit quite as hard, but it still works. It's pretty good. There's that, yeah.
Super Bowl this evening, is that right?
It is.
Like, by the time you're listening to this, you'll know what's happened, listeners.
But we probably still won't, because we've got to wait another week to be able to watch it, basically. Because we're not going to stay up until like 3 a.m. Yeah. No. I mean, I would, but I can't stay at Rob's house until 3 a.m.
Why not?
I mean, you probably could, but I will be asleep.
Yes. Yeah.
What is it, up till 4 in the morning, I think it is for us?
Yeah, so. Easily.
Yeah, bit nuts. Bit nuts on a school night.
The big question is not who will win. It's like, will Kendrick Lamar play Not Like Us?
Yeah.
What do you reckon? Is it third year in the road for Mahomes?
I don't know. And there's also like, will what's his face propose to Taylor Swift in front of the whole world or something? That would be so ridiculous.
It's going to be another year of Taylor Swift cam. How many times have they come to Taylor Swift?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Swift and President Trump or whatever, right?
Yeah. So,
God.
Who's going to get more camera time?
Never put them on separately. Have them only appear in a split screen where it shows both at the same time.
Trump and Swift.
These are the two most important people in the world. we must give them equal screen time.
Yeah.
Balance.
She didn't. She did endorse Kamala. No, did
yes,
she
did
Kamala
eventually.
Harris? She did in the end. Yeah. So
she's the true opposition.
Yep.
Swiftie for president.
Yep.
Let's start it now.
Anywho, video games.
Well, let me tell you about random computer / YouTube bullshit first, as you.
Yay, bullshit. YouTube.
Yep. Well, the small amount of YouTube advert bullshit, of course, is like, I really hate when, because I don't have personalized adverts turned on, right? So YouTube has to work with a very limited data set on my account.
Mm.
Like, it knows some stuff. It can clearly still detect my location, because I occasionally get extremely specific Suffolk adverts.
Oh, really?
Really? Wow.
Where it's like, this is very targeted, except not, because it's only got a location. But the most annoying ones like it is when it's like, somehow, even though it shouldn't be able to do this, it's managing to advertise products that I've already bought.
Oh.
Like, I'm getting adverts for my chair, and I'm like,
oh, yeah,
how could it possibly know that?
Yeah, that definitely happened to me when I bought the chair you're currently sitting in.
Yeah.
I hadn't yet used, got my ad-free solution through my Steam Deck yet. So, right. So everything it was showing me on YouTube was basically, get a secret lab chair. Yeah. It's like, I just got one, mate.
But like the thing is, for me, I didn't order that. I didn't even order that chair from my PC. That was the order from the Mac downstairs. Oh. I guess it's the same IP address, so yeah. Maybe they're managing to pull some kind of information.
I mean, that's probably all they'd have to go on, especially if you're rejecting cookies.
Yeah. But yes, I don't. And also, it's like it's a bit late. Like it's been almost a year already.
Well, maybe you've broken your chair.
I mean, maybe.
It's the American way. I don't know.
Yeah, replace it after a year is the American way, definitely. And then the other PC-related bullshit, Windows 11-related bullshit, I just found funny, because there was an update, which obviously annoyed me, because it was like, Windows has to restart, and it's like, oh, fucking goddammit, Windows. Would you not?
It's been a really long time since I've seen an update that hasn't been, like, initiated by my IT team at work. I haven't been interrupted on my home PC, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I've had one where it's actually done like the full forced update, where it's like Windows is just going to shut down in 10 minutes, fuck you. this one was annoying because like I restarted to do the update and then it decided that it needed to restart again immediately afterwards. So I was like, really?
Yeah.
Really, Windows? Come on. Thought we were past this.
No, I've definitely seen that.
But then the thing about it was the update that happened, I just found funny because it's basically Microsoft admitting defeat, because one of the things in the update was that they've put the words back on like the copy paste buttons, because in the Windows 11 UI then they used to just be icons at the top of the right click menu. There's just the icons of like copy paste, cut, all those, but they were just icons and they were kind of indistinguishable if you didn't know exactly which ones you were looking at. But now they've just put the words back on underneath. It's just like they've given up on making their UI that clean, where it's like people need to be able to understand your UI to be able to use it. Put words that just tell you what the buttons mean. God damn you.
I guess, well,
because some things definitely have, even if those icons don't make any sense anymore, they still have... Like the floppy disks, everyone knows that save. But copy and paste, I don't think have icons.
It's a little clipboard.
Has like scissors.
Copy paste, they're pretty standardized icons.
Scissors, right? And then like the clipboard with the paper copy on top.
Scissors, two documents, like diagonally stacked.
Yeah.
I guess.
And
that's
clipboard.
Really vague though, isn't it? Two documents diagonally stacked.
I mean, that's why those icons sucked, because they were also in like the minimalist like Windows 11 icon design anyway, which it's just like just gray and blue line work.
That's not such a great look, is it, the line work?
And it was just like these icons are really indistinct. So yes, now words are back in the UI.
That copy icon is not ideal. I know it is the copy icon.
Yeah, it's ubiquitous, but, like, and it's like I don't know. I think you can get away with it being the icon, like the save icon. I think that's fine. But because I'm just sort of thinking, like, from a discoverability perspective, it's like, okay, it's not great not having the words just there, but you can still have tooltips on a right-click menu.
Well, sure.
And it's like, that allows discoverability. And it's like, on a mobile phone, you don't get any of that either, right? It's like, on Samsung, you get the, if you've copied something recently to your clipboard, you get a tiny, tiny little paste icon, and it is the paste icon. It is a clipboard icon, not the word paste. Just above your keyboard, right? That's just how it works on. Maybe that's a Google thing more than a Samsung thing. I'm not sure, but
I mean, it makes more sense for phones where you don't have much space to work with, I guess, to just go to icons.
But... You just can't have text everywhere on a phone, right? I mean, in a weird way, you probably could, but you'd have to make it really tiny.
Those screens, high resolution screens.
Yeah, those screens could do it, but it would be really tiny.
The trouble is that, of course,
tried like booting a phone to BIOS or something like that. Like that text is small.
No, I imagine it would be.
Why have you done that? Oh, for work.
I had to recover a phone once. It was a while back, something went a bit wrong with one of my. I think it was an Android phone. And I had to boot it up in its recovery mode or something, and then you get to actually see the sort of classic messages like a system boot come up, and it's like, they're so tiny.
And the other thing that changed in that Windows 11 update, for some reason, they updated the like USB plug-in noise.
Oh, really?
I don't know why. It's not even that different, but it is different.
Is it different from the Windows 10? What, was, well, was yeah, it different?
It was always different. One? Of course right. It was different. You got to have a new noise in every version of Windows.
But I'm so used to everything being constantly bombarded by bum-ba-da-bum.
That one sucks because it's so long.
Bum-ba-da-bum.
It was only two notes in Windows 11.
What's the new one?
It's the same, just like the sound effect is different.
Oh, the instrument.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would just be funny if it was like a honk. Like, honk.
Single note. Bong.
Nothing can ever beat that one that you had in the 90s, cutting that bit of Destiny's Child out for any kind of query prompt.
Yes. Question?
Custom is always going to be superior.
So good.
Question?
Now video game news, I guess.
I mean, I've got some more stuff.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I got some more. It was like, let's stay on the computer bent for now. Like I'm interested in your experience because I've still not used Windows 11. Like I'm in 10 land, somewhat in denial that
you're going to not be in 10 land for much longer. Yeah, force you to upgrade.
Yeah, the October is looming. I don't know if Microsoft will budge because it still feels like a bad idea, right? The whole support ending thing, given that market share is still not great for Windows 11 compared to Windows 10. It feels like maybe a mistake to drop 10 still.
Mm.
And say what you will about the whole TPM module situation and the hardware requirements of Windows 11 obsoleting a whole smeg ton of electronics. Ugh, which is, you know, not much fun to think about.
For you.
Well,
for you specifically.
Eco warrior in me is still sort of sits there going, yeah, I don't, yeah, that does kind of suck. But throwing that aside for a second, is 11 all right?
I mean, as we talked about when I first got my new PC, it's like I don't really use it in any way that I notice where it's not all right, except for like the right-click menu sucking.
Right. Turn off any annoying things. I suppose you can't turn off ads. I suppose you can't turn off OneDrive constantly saying you're running out of space.
Well, I don't have it on to start with, so like I don't use that service, so I don't have the notifications. Problem solved.
All of them need to chill. I'm just going to say this about all of you online storage providers. You need to chill the fuck out, right? Like, I get like 2 to 3 pings from OneDrive on my work PC for some reason, not my home machine. All of them have my personal OneDrive account on them, but my work PC is the one that just keeps pinging me saying, you're nearly out of space. I'm not nearly out of space, really. I'm at 82%. That to me strikes me as like, oh, I've still got another 18. That's fine. Like,
to momentarily go ahead to game I've been playing, continuing with PlayStation, is it's basically like the pipes in that game. Like, the maximum pipe pressure is like 60 megapascals, but as soon as you go over 50, they just creak all the time. So it's like you don't actually want to go to maximum or even close to maximum. You have to go to like significantly lower than the maximum to make them not creak.
That's annoying.
Yep. There's a mod to fix that.
Yeah, you'd want it when they're close to bursting, sure, but I don't consider...
like 5/6 pressure, yeah, basically.
It's not close enough for me.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's the 80% problem.
Surprisingly, Google are actually one of the better ones for that. Okay, they put it in every single app you use with them, and if you're using the web, there might be a little pop-up in the top right when you visit a Google service saying, you're at 87% capacity. Yeah, I'm about 87, so it's a little bit higher. Sorry, it's a little bit more. The worst of them of all, and not because of on-screen notifications or anything like that, is Dropbox, because they basically like just they have like weird periods where they flood your inbox with like, by the way, you need to do something about your Dropbox account, otherwise you're going to lose access to it. And it's like, that's a complete and utter lie. They're just warning you about you running out of space. And it's like, oh, your access to your Dropbox is in trouble. You better check it out now. And they just want you to buy more space. And it's like, chill out, guys. It's fine. Yeah. You gave me a free tier. I'm going to damn well use it.
Well, they're going to spam you with shit because that's how you get a free tier.
Yeah. Just chill out. But you're not endearing me to it. That's all. I like that kind of stuff works the exact opposite on me. If you annoy me, I am never going to buy it.
Except when you have to buy one of them.
I actually vaguely considered extending my Google just as a backup solution at one point, but nah, not now. Bothered me too much.
So which ones have bothered you? Dropbox, all and of them. OneDrive, and what's the Google one? Drive.
Yeah, just Drive, Google Drive, OneDrive, Dropbox. Well, I've got them all because, you know, you get as much free space as you can, guys. you might as well.
Start making multiple Gmail accounts just so you can have a drive on each of them.
I mean, apparently I still have an iCloud, but like I can't log into that anymore because I don't have an Apple device that it will work with, you know, for the two-factor thing. It's like I just can't log into it anymore. So there's that. But also I'm asking because I'm so close to pulling the trigger on a new PC.
It's coming.
I'm so close.
Well, I mean, that will solve the problem.
Has worn off.
Yeah,
it's time for a full blown one.
I've specced one out. Like,
what's the graphics card sitch?
Do not get any of the 50 series. God,
no, it sounds like the 50 series is a bit of a tire fire, like
4080 or something.
Well, you know, probably bang for buck. I was probably going for a 40. I'd probably go for a 47 Ti Super. What did you get, Zach, in the end?
I don't remember. As usual, this information completely left my mind immediately.
You don't know which one you have. Okay.
I mean, my
prime... It's an NVIDIA GeForce.
Yes, it is an NVIDIA. That much we can tell by, you know, a bunch of NVIDIA programs constantly popping up and shit. Yeah. I actually do use the overlay now.
Oh, okay.
Like the actual... Because it has like a FPS counter... Because I used to just use the Steam one, which does it through the Steam overlay, does it on all your games through Steam. But in the NVIDIA one, obviously, because it's on the graphics card, you can just show it for everything. And it has, like, not just FPS, it has, like, GPU load as a percentage on it as well. And, like, latency even. Although I'm not entirely sure what that latency is telling me. Cards to render... onto the screen latency.
Yeah, I guess it depends. Well, maybe, but like, I guess it could be that. It could be depending on the render pipeline that the game uses. Maybe NVIDIA knows that it's like, no, actually, I'm a frame behind or something because I'm processing multiple frames at once.
Yeah.
So there's a bit more delay to screen.
I could probably just open the NVIDIA app and it'll probably just tell me what that number means.
Yeah.
I just haven't looked. It's just like I accidentally turned on that overlay using like a key combo once when I was playing a game and then I was just like, oh, this is actually sort of nice. I'll just leave it, I guess.
Or it could be, the cynic in me is like, or it's a device to make you think there's less latency if you turn on AI frame gen.
Well, this is pre that.
Okay.
And also, I mean, I guess this card would support DLSS 3 or whatever, but not the new ones.
Well, DLSS 4 is actually coming back to 40 series and I think some 30 series cards. Not without some performance loss, if you want to turn it on.
Sure.
But it's coming. Yeah, so that's what I think I'd hit a 4070 Ti Super. It's still expensive. It's still a nearly £800 card. But I am contemplating maybe I don't need, because my primary reason for getting a new machine is that when I'm doing some of my music projects now, I am really stressing the CPU out by the time I've got everything firing and I'm trying to do the mastering chain. And it's like, yeah, I know I could bounce the whole thing out to audio, but that's a pain in the ass to then go back if you need to change something, blah, 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 blah. Rather do it all live, man. Do it all live. As live as it really is, but you know what I mean. So yeah, I am stressing this machine out now. Turns out it's lasted a good 9 years, which I think is pretty good, right? For how we use these things. So actually now, but finally getting to a problematic state. I'm actually kind of fine with how it runs most games still. Like that 1080 in this was the most expensive part in this machine when I bought it.
Yeah.
And for most things, it is still fine. Like, okay, I wouldn't be able to run Indiana Jones on it at all because, you know, ray tracing has now become a minimum requirement. But still, it's lasted a pretty long time. And I also didn't realize this thing cost $2,000 back then. I thought it was way cheaper than that. And so when I'm specking out this new machine and it came at $2,500, I was like, oh boy, that seems like a lot of money. And then I look back in time and it's like, Oh, I've kind of done this already.
Right. Well, maybe try the truth down to like...
as it was, I guess. You know, well, back in the day.
Money is different now. As
money is different, yeah.
But maybe just try and trim it down to like 2,000. Keep it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'd trim. I've been thinking, I don't know what I'd trim at this point. It's like, I guess I could trim the RAM because I've spec'd it to 64 gig thinking, well, the possibility of running a VM is always there, right? I mean,
but RAM is always easy to put in afterwards.
It is, yeah.
And then you can pretend you didn't spend 2,500.
Yeah. And I've that includes a 4 terabyte M2 drive as well. And it's like, you know what I'm like. Space is always a thing. And I kind of want to get rid of my multitude of drives.
I mean, I would
reduce the number of drives I have.
I would say get a smaller M2 because you're not really meant to put stuff on the M2 anyway. That's meant to be the system drive and you're meant to reserve it for only the critical stuff. So it doesn't need to be gigantic.
But
bigger off M2 drive.
Maybe. But one of the things that was... notably challenging actually was that a lot of motherboards now only have 2 SATA ports on them. So if I did want to so the case I was thinking is the, you know, we've talked about it before, the Fractal North XL, which is a lovely looking case.
That's the one I
lovely looking thing. Yeah, I'm gonna have it.
Yeah,
lovely looking thing. It would look good in this room. It's got space for, I think, like mounting 4 drives at most, maybe 6. That if you're doing, if you've got big drives, like big old school hard drives in there as well, I think you can do 4 smaller ones. And yeah, there's a mix, but anyway. But that, none of that really matters if the motherboard only has 2 SATA ports on it. So I've had to up my budget a little bit on the motherboard side to get one that actually has, you know, can deal with modern DDR5 and
why is that?
Decent
is that
graphics
because
cards.
Most people use like, well,
it's because most people buying a machine don't expand them anymore, right? With like old drives, like
because they pay for one drive or whatever it is.
Not yeah. even, but like a lot of motherboards now have multiple M2 slots, right? So if you're gonna expand and you've just bought a machine, you're not a crazy fool like me that keeps everything. You would buy an M2 drive and just naturally expand into it, right? But I don't have that. I have like a whole bunch of drives that I can easily reuse, and because like, they don't need to be fast. They're just for stuff.
You and also have a NAS. It's just like you have the most space ever.
I do.
Like
just... Yeah, but I have boku de bytes.
Can you not stick all those slow old drives in the NAS then?
No,
not easily is the answer. Not, obviously,
not ideally. No, so for NAS stuff, you are supposed to get drives that are
matching.
Yeah, 2 matching drives, and they're supposed to be more heavy duty. And if you want proper redundancy, then you need to make sure those 2 drives are paired from the outset. You can't just put an existing drive with data in it and have it work.
I'm going to fess up that like my NAS, I didn't choose the redundancy. It's just like I'm just going to trust that these drives are going to be okay.
If I
lose the stuff on my NAS, it's fine because it's all like media stuff that I can re-download.
It has saved me the redundancy. I did lose I did lose a drive and had to restore. I would not advise that. Definitely have a redundant solution if you're going down that path.
I've never lost a hard drive. Maybe that'll happen one day.
Yeah, it'll come to us all. I think I've lost 2 or 3 in which is actually a surprisingly low number given how many drives I have. But
yes, I mean, I don't think I've ever lost one mechanically. I lost one file structurally.
Okay, yeah, my number's higher if you count that. Yeah, but mechanically I've had like 2 or 3 fail. And it's just a bit weirder with SSDs, right? Like at least with a hard drive, you know the thing is effed immediately. Yeah. SSDs are a bit harder to pin down when they're dying.
Practically the same as trying to figure out if your RAM is dying, where it's just like you just have to run RAM tests and be like, do you even understand what these mean?
They are supposed to be like constantly self-diagnosing, right? Yeah. Since they went proper the smart system, I think they call it on SSDs. So in theory, they have some metrics they can start broadcasting if they're in trouble. But yeah, anyway. So that was the plan. Go for a 4 terabyte M2. Give me plenty of space to expand with another M2 in future, but be able to move my existing drives. Not all of them. I'm not going to move every single thing. I'm going to move most of them if I can, just for ease at first.
I have a weird requirement, which isn't really a requirement, which I'm sure I could work around. But if I was to just replace my PC, which is sitting under my desk and I haven't turned on since I moved into this flat, because I don't use it, I have this
Which is why we haven't done Deus Ex videos, by the way.
No, exactly. Actually, wasn't I running out on the Mac? I can't remember.
I thought that was on your PC.
Yeah, I think it was.
Was it? Okay. Maybe that's why, yeah. Yeah, that probably is why. I have this setup where I have the subwoofer for my speakers on next to it, and then I put the amplifier on top of the case, and the subwoofer, which is fine in old style case like I currently have, but these days they like to vent out of the top as well as the back.
Yeah,
and I'm just wondering would it be possible with like the Fractal North to vent out of the back and maybe the side and not out of the top?
Yeah, you can do that. I think you can vent out the front with the Fractal if you want. You can if you like want to put
go backwards.
Yeah, if you want to put a front cooling. Like if you want to use a radiator with a water cooling system, right, which you would traditionally mount at the top of the case.
Yes.
But you can mount that radiator on the front of the Fractal, at least.
Oh, weird.
I mean, my one's on the back. My water cooled fan that connects to the motherboard is on the back.
It's on the back wall. Yeah.
Are you going to do water?
Yeah, I might. It's like I don't necessarily have a need to, but I think I might. It's one of those like I might as well make this a nice clean build if I'm going to build it myself. Because I did look into getting it built by someone else.
Yeah,
but with the same, pretty much the exact same spec, I would be after. There's a £250 uplift for the privilege, right? And it's just
it'd still
be better for me to try and build it myself.
Yeah,
and I'm quite happy doing that. So it's fine. It's a project. No, yeah. I won't break the USB this time.
Like, so you say.
That's only happened on one of my machines. This one's been fine.
And it's sort of fun, isn't it, putting together Lego? Yeah. It's just a weird thing because it's like you only do it every 8 years or something. So it's not something you can like get proficient with.
Boy, I know I'm going to have to do it because I'm going to have to move to a single OS environment. I'm not going to have my gaming OS and I'm not going to have my work OS anymore. I'm just going to have one install now where everything is, where my music environment is, where the video editing is, where the games are. I'm just going to move it all into one. And oh boy, that's going to be a faff. Like, I'm so aware of the amount of work that's going to take.
I mean, that was what happened the last PC.
That's why I've got the dual boot, because I didn't want to do the fat. It's going to be a problem. But that's
obviously
why.
Obviously, you're not going to do this, but could you run all your crazy music shit on like a Mac Studio or something? Just blast it with a tiny little box.
On a what, sorry?
On a like a Mac Studio or a Mac Mini, those new Mac Minis are like insanely powerful.
True. Aren't they?
And they're like the size of a little puck.
I mean, maybe, but then that's the same problem. I would have to move the environment.
Yeah,
and it's there's no guarantee that everything I use would also be Mac happy.
Yeah. Anyway, I was just wondering if you were going to keep things separate.
It would be a possibility for sure. I'd have to buy another machine, but it would be a possibility. I wouldn't.
I heard those things, the Mac Mini base, if you don't start putting more, you know, configuring it to have more RAM and stuff than the baseline, then it's really, really good value, apparently, which is unusual, obviously.
Yeah. Don't expand it. Just get the base model.
Because the baseline's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, because Apple still have ridiculous charges for bigger hard disks and bigger RAM, right? Like they are bonkers money.
Anywho, okay.
Yeah, cool. I don't know. Maybe that will happen soon. Maybe it won't. It's still a lot of money. It's basically all of my, for me, quote-unquote, cash reserves right now for us to do that, which is, you know, always a bit scary.
You're what, free?
No, my for me cash for reserve, me. As opposed to not allocated to something else.
Your pocket money, right? Okay.
Yeah, it's my pocket money. That's a good way of saying it. Yeah, I don't know. And the thing is I don't actually like. I don't play that many games on my PC anymore. But like when I do, I want it to run well. And it's like, okay, I would use the That's why I was wondering, like, maybe I could not buy a GPU right now. Could I get away with that and just keep?
But this is onboard graphics.
Well, no, put move the 1080. Obviously,
move the 1080. Okay,
because that's going to be better than any onboard.
Sorry,
thing.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. Move that over. The only thing I would probably lose from that, I probably wouldn't gain when we're recording videos and stuff like that from being able to use NVENC in the background and at the same time as running the game. Probably wouldn't gain anything from there, and video editing might not benefit from the extra CUDA power. So I don't know if that's actually a bit of a misstep to do, but
it's an interesting idea.
It's interesting. Yeah, it would save about 800 quid.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a small number.
And then, you know, obviously the graphics card, well, it's probably the most important part these days. And like you could time the buying of that to precisely when the value curve was right and the demand was right, you know, because it, you know, is like, is it AI? Is it crypto? What's the thing? You know, is it them overpromising? And like, you know, at any given time, there's all these factors over whether you can actually get good value out of an NVIDIA card, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that seems to be what the current worry is about the 50s, right? That they're leaning too heavily into AI rather than raw performance.
Yeah.
Because AI is what makes NVIDIA money at the moment, really. It's not the game side.
But if it's like, oh, okay, so the 50s are like, maybe the thing is to get the 40 series cheap, but it's like, they won't be, because everyone
be cheap.
Will have that idea. Yeah. Everyone will have the same idea,
no,
and then
only,
they'll stop manufacturing them, and then they'll actually get, so it won't help, so I don't know.
If anything, they had a little bit of a bump, I think, when the 50s were all announced.
Exactly. Especially when you saw the, you know, performance, and you realised that it wasn't that big a step up.
Well, yeah, some of the, like, the 50, they've just made it really, like, it's always confusing, right? But there's like the it's very confusing this time around, right? Because a 5770, I think, has less onboard VRAM and fewer CUDA cores than the 4070,
right?
But like the raw core performance is better, something like that. Yeah, so it's really hard to get a measure for exactly where these things sit. They're just new, not necessarily better.
And then I look at all the games they're benchmarking with, and I ask myself the really important question is, like, do I even want to play these games?
For sure.
What's the point in all this? Yeah.
I mean, it might. The good news for me might be it's like, well, with Sony moving a lot of their stuff to PC, it's like, well, maybe I'd just play it there rather than bother.
Yeah, that is true.
Maybe not bother with PS5 and wait for like PS6 or something and come back in next cycle or something like that. It's
If you're all right with not playing it on your TV.
Yeah, that is a big thing. I do like doing that. Is where I like to play most of my games now, is in the living room on the big screen. That is a big thing for me. A few years down the line, though, that might not, right? Because Badger will be stealing the screen to play stuff.
Fortnite, yeah.
Yeah, endless Fortnite.
Minecraft.
Minecrafted up. No Roblox. No Roblox is not allowed. Banned.
Okay.
Get that out of here. Anyway,
Sonic
I'm done.
Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm done. That's just my thought process at the moment. I'm on the edge, man.
I had the similar thoughts because it's like, I think it actually depended on like what I would actually do with a PC is probably play Civilization 7. And if that's not, if that's not ready, really, then maybe not. So maybe we move into news.
Woo! Not a lot of news. Quite a week. Quite a couple of weeks, really, since Switch 2 and Microsoft Dev Diary Week. We've got, there's in theory a PlayStation showcase happening soon. It is rumored to be around Valentine's Day, so expect news next time, I guess.
Cool.
But, I mean, it's rumored. It's not confirmed or anything like that. We don't tend to know about these showcases until like last week or something these days, but. And it's still not April, so we're still not going to know about Switch 2 for a while. Current rumor is Switch 2 is going to be $400. How do we feel about that? That will probably translate to £400 because that's how it always bloody works, right?
How much is a PS5? I'm getting so lost.
Not much more than that. It's like $450, I think.
For really?
And that might be for the digital-only version, something like that. So, it's not far off. There were some other leaks that happened prior to these industry experts weighing in, saying it's probably going to be $400, that it was in the 300s somewhere. I think that came from a European source. They were stating it was probably going to be in the mid-300s. I think that's a much happier place for it to be. Because my concern is like, if it hits $400, it's like, that's Steam Deck territory. Yeah. And it's like, is that too much at that point? And is that in conflict with Nintendo's want to make the, you know, the base hardware in an affordable range, and then screw you on the games, obviously. It's what Nintendo do.
Yeah. I mean, they make the console reasonable, and but also make the hardware such that they're not
actually
a loss.
Yeah, it's not actually a loss leader.
Yeah. And then they make all the money on the games, yeah. Mm. Which I think is a good model. I mean,
yeah, it's worked for them for a long time. But
yeah, I mean, it has to be less, has to be considerably less than the PS5, I think.
Yeah, I think 400 is too high. And a lot of people have been saying, a lot of pundits have been saying, yeah, that seems believable. And I'm like, I mean, maybe it's believable in a post-tariff world.
Just dreaming of the day when we get they don't even do this any longer. This would be like an old school E3 thing where they like $599 or whatever, like when they're doing the announcement of the price. But like, if we get to the time where the US price is actually significantly different, where it's not just like, this is the price in dollars and then we directly convert that into pounds because we're lazy.
Mm.
Where it's like, now the US price is actually 25% higher than our price because it should be.
So maybe that $400 is not so bad because it will actually translate better.
But that's not going to happen.
No. Seems unlikely.
We're just going to get screwed.
Like the rest of the planet, it seems.
Yep.
The stock market was anything to go by when all that went off. Oh, boy. That's the other concern on my mind, right? If this is new PC year, which it has to be at some point because October, end of support date for Windows 10, that and new Switch year. Oh, that's an expensive year.
Well, as I say, if you can save £500 on your PC, then that will pay for the Switch.
Pay for the Switch, yeah.
That's true. If you think about it in terms of number of graphics cards, it's 0.5 of a graphics card.
Yeah, there's definitely more bang for buck. Anyway, I'm on the PC. My brain's gone to the PC build again. Let it lie. Let it lie.
Yeah,
so that's Switch stuff. That's all we really know there. Studio news. Gears of War E-Day is now being co-developed by People Can Fly. You know, the Bulletstorm guys, or, you know, the Gears of War Judgment guys. You know, the least liked Gears of War game. I don't know. That's interesting that we're finding this out now. I don't know if that means that they've been co-developing it the whole time. I sort of sounds like maybe they haven't been. And that maybe Gears of War E-Day is not likely to be out anytime soon, is my other thought here.
Mm.
Maybe it's actually further away than we think. And Microsoft just announced it because what else were they going to announce, I guess? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I don't have any beef with People Can Fly. I like Bulletstorm quite a bit, for instance. That was
a while ago, though.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, but it was a fun game. Honestly, they made Outriders, right? That was the last thing of theirs I played.
Mm.
A sort of live service shootery thing that was okay. It was fine. So maybe Gears of War E-Day will be fun.
I mean, maybe they'll rise to it. It's a good license, I guess. And it seems like it would suit them, right? I mean, Bulletstorm was like Unreal, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it was fairly early Unreal 4. Yeah. Was it Unreal 4? Or was it still 3? Might have still been 3. It was 360 life cycle, so
yeah,
it's probably still 3. But yes, they are definitely an Unreal Engine health, so there's no danger there.
Okay, well, we'll see.
Yep, just something happening. Ubisoft continue to sound like they're in a bit of bother as they shatter another studio. This time it's Ubisoft Leamington Spa getting the axe. They have been historically pretty much a support team for Ubisoft, working on games like Division 2 and most recently Star Wars Outlaws and plenty of other things. This is more of a bummer simply because of their heritage before Ubisoft. They were previously known as Freestyle Games and were pretty instrumental in helping out with DJ Hero, and I believe they did all of the work on Guitar Hero Live for Activision. So they sound like a pretty talented rhythm game studio that then got just subsumed into doing boring stuff. Like a lot of studios we used to like. I was reminded about Criterion earlier as we read some non-news about Battlefield earlier.
Yep.
But I wasn't really going to mention, but you know, hey, they're working on a Battlefield game. And
Did they announce, hey, like, help us do some early access shit or something?
Basically, like, yeah.
Help us test something that we have no idea if what we're doing.
EA Labs, it's like a closed beta program that they want there and they want people to show interest in.
Right.
I mean, they showed some really like tiny clips on their Twitter of pre-alpha footage that just things exploding. Don't think you can really learn anything from that.
It looks like Battlefield at this point.
It looks like Battlefield. Like since,
I guess, one almost. The destruction has got ramped up, but one that still had that same, like, lots of explosions franticness to it.
Yeah, what was the other Modern Warfare franchise that EA were working on alongside Battlefield?
What, like
Medal of Honor?
It might have been that, yeah, because, do you remember the sort of whole we are tier one thing or something? Mm. And, yeah, the two games ended up kind of looking the same. Yeah, it's got that same look. It's still got that look, right? It's... And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I guess you could say, and the fact that you could say it looks like Battlefield is probably a good thing, but they always look like Battlefield.
They always look the same.
It's all about the structure, isn't it? It's all about the actual gameplay. It's all about the things you can't really get, you know, see in an instant.
Yeah.
The feel and flow of Battlefield is the important bit, and the progression. Just remake Battlefield 3, you'll be fine.
I thought I saw a trailer for a war film set in the Iraq War, so that seems maybe that will be a trend, you know, we'll start to get... Because Battlefield 2 and stuff was around when that was all happening, the War on Terror stuff, right? And
there
was a lot of, like, nondescript Arab maps, right?
Yeah.
But maybe that, like, it's been, well, 20 years?
I mean...
Yeah, so
yeah,
long like, enough I mean, to just... Yeah,
seems like fair game at this point. What war was? You're gonna have to forgive my ignorance. It's like they're gonna. I feel like they still have to be a little careful, like because 6 days in Fallujah and all that.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That kicked up.
That was 2005 ish. I would have said.
Yeah, so
20 years.
And that game wasn't. It just wasn't. Let's just leave it there.
I mean, the Battle of Fallujah, not the game.
Yeah. I know, but like that kind of kicked up some. Just its existence still triggered a little bit. They'll have to be a little careful, but yeah, it's probably at this point doable. Is there like a weird like zone where as soon as we cross to the 2000 barrier where we still haven't got past the point where that is like old enough news to do things with?
Well, yeah, for obvious reasons.
Is the millennium just like a strange, like it's holding at the millennium?
It's 1 year after that.
It's the year after.
I know
it's a certain day in September.
I know exactly what you mean, but things still hold around that time. Do you know what I mean? It's not like that line is moving. It's like that seems to be the... That's interesting. Moving on. Probably rightly so, Steam has added warnings to the store to let you know if an early access project you're looking at hasn't really updated or been doing anything for a while.
Which is probably going to be a stupidly exploitable system anyway, where it's just like you just have to upload an update file to the Steam server to get it to disable that message.
Yeah, it's probably going to be an automatic system. You're right. And if there was no, if just if there was some update, it goes, oh, it's not dormant. It's not dormant. I don't need to show that warning.
You need that to be put into the tag system to have people to have the community tag in.
Yeah, that's true. You could have hashtag dormant or something. Vaporware. Hashtag vaporware.
Or, you know, just, I mean, they won't do it in the actual Steam UI, but as we were talking about before, it's just like you can see through backend stuff, like you can literally see the file updates on game updates. So like you could just have like almost the same way that the reviews have a chart which shows you like how many reviews there have been over time. You'd need like an update chart to show you where the updates happened and how big they were.
It'd be nice if that was in Steam proper. You're right. Yeah. I know you have to go a little bit out of your way because SteamDB provides that information. And there's a browser extension. So if you're viewing Steam through your browser, not through Steam, you can get that information up front on the pages you're looking at, which is neat. I guess that's a little bit like the makes me think of like the ProtonDB badges you get on Steam Deck. It's like, that's cool. It's neat that there's a way of doing that.
But yes, they never put that into the actual Steam interface. That's too much detail for regular consumers. And, you know, who cares about regular consumers? You're getting this message, maybe, and that's enough.
Well, yeah. I mean, in theory, yeah, the early access tag should be enough, right? But there are so many games that are in early access for an incredible length of time now.
Well, it's the difference between an incredible length of time and no updates. Like, you could be in early access forever and still do updates. Like, fucking 7 Days to Die was in early access for 10 years, but they did still update pretty regularly. It just took them a fucking long time to get out of early access.
And some games never come out of early access, but they're in an arguably acceptable state.
Yeah, and that's just kind of a dumb... Like, I mean, that's just a dumb decision on the developer's part, really.
Sure.
You'd make a whole bunch more sales if you just made a 1.0 announcement.
It's a marketing moment, isn't
it?
At some point, you might as well use it before you abandon a project, right? Yeah. Anyway, I think it's a good move. It helps a little bit, but yeah, you're right. It's not potentially exploitable by bad actors. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Finally, and possibly most contentiously, depending on what camp you historically sit, video game console wise, Forza Horizon 5 is making its way to PlayStation 5.
Wow.
Formerly known as I don't know if it's still true, but known as one of Microsoft's big three, right? It was Halo, Gears of War, and Forza. Yeah, I mean, just saying that out loud sounds ridiculous now, right? It's like Gears and Halo kind of have no presence.
Yeah.
And they haven't done for a while, but Forza is still a juggernaut.
Forza is interesting because obviously it's its own game, but like Forza and Gran Turismo are, you know, if you had the PlayStation, you could get the Gran Turismo, and if you had the Xbox, you could get the Forza, right? Sure. But this is Forza Horizon. Yeah.
Yes, this is Horizon, and there's no. I don't know that there's real any competition with that. If you're on PlayStation, The Crew is probably the best you can get, right? If you want that style of festival-driven, do whatever the hell you want in a car game.
Yeah, not really close.
Or like MotorStorm, yes.
Not that MotorStorm's a current IP. Yeah, there aren't. I mean, Test Drive tried to come back, didn't it recently? I guess that's in the same camp. But yeah, there's nothing. For better or worse, there's nothing quite like Forza Horizon.
Yeah.
That pulls it off as well as Forza Horizon does. And I'll be talking a little bit about that later.
Would they ship Forza Horizon 4 and 3? That would be good.
No, they can't, right? Because Forza Horizon, all previous Forza Horizon games are currently out of their licensing agreements. So they can't sell you any of them.
Right.
Without re-upping on the licenses.
But where, the Britain one.
Yeah, I know. That's why they like dropped it to an insanely low price before it went off store last year.
What do they license? The cars or the music?
Yeah, they have to license the cars and the music. It's everything.
Right.
It's everything in there. It's all licensed, right? None of these games don't exist without licenses. So
right, and that'll happen to 5. I mean,
Lego, Hot Wheels, anything that they've included as DLC, right? Because Forza Horizon 4 has the Lego DLC pack.
DLC, yeah.
So presumably all of that has to be correctly licensed before you...
Mm.
I mean, maybe less so. Lego. I don't know. Lego seem happy to maybe do permanent licenses for things. But
yeah, I have to transfer the DLC to the PS5, technically.
Yeah. It's almost certainly the music, right? The music seems to always be the sticker with video games. It's like in terms of keeping licenses about.
But who even cares about the fucking music in Forza Horizon 4?
Yeah, it's kind of the background stuff. I mean, some of it's really good, but like, don't get me wrong, it's still just there to be the background. And I still have beef with how they treat the audio of the music in the Forza Horizon games.
Presumably something like GTA 5 that's been about for 11 years, they just keep paying the licenses for all of that, right? Presumably
yeah. Or they just paid up front to be like, no, we want a permanent license to this stuff.
I guess if you're GTA, you can do that.
Yeah.
Just about.
Yeah, if you've got the budget for it, you can do it, right?
I wonder. It's interesting because obviously Red Dead 2 didn't have to. Well, one or two.
No, true. Like I said, nothing. They didn't need any, right? For that.
No, they just made all their own music.
So yeah, what does this mean? If Microsoft are willing to put one of the big three on other platforms, yeah. Presumably their experiments recently of moving their games to PlayStation has been successful enough that they're like, yes. Yeah, this is making us money. Let's keep doing it.
So what's the potential if we want to speculate? Like, they could stop making hardware completely, right?
Yeah, this is the end game of the conversation. Are they considering carrying on being a hardware company?
But like, what would they do? Because, I mean, I bet if they could swing it, they would love it if they could put Game Pass on PlayStation.
Absolutely.
But Sony's not going to want that, right? And they'd be beholden to Sony, basically, at that point. If Sony at any point in the future were like, no more Game Pass, they'd be screwed.
Yep.
So that doesn't... That's like a non-starter, isn't it?
Yeah. That would be... It wouldn't be unheard of, right? Because if you think about how Apple manage subscription services on their... Maybe it is risky now because of all the recent court rulings and stuff like that, but that was how it worked, right? If you were on an Apple device and you signed up to a subscription with like Netflix or something, Apple get a cut of that subscription.
Yeah.
That might not be true anymore, but at least it was partially true there. If Microsoft wanted to cut that deal with Sony, they could.
Sony.
But... it's whether Sony would agree to it or not, or is highly questionable. You would never see a Sony game on Game Pass, right? That would never happen. But Sony have a competing product. Win PlayStation Plus. So that can't happen now anyway. That boat has already sailed.
And even if they did invite in like third party platforms onto PlayStation and they struck a deal with Microsoft, there's nothing to stop like Steam Valve coming in there and putting Steam on PlayStation, is there really? Or I don't know, Epic Store.
I think Valve wanted to do that, right, back in the day.
Yeah.
Why not? But they never really got off the ground. In some ways, I think that was their play with things like the Orange Box and stuff like that. Let's get people aware of Steam as a concept. But it was in that sort of era, right, where I think Valve were thinking about what they could do to make that possible. I think there have been like some interviews, forgive me, I can't remember specific examples, where Microsoft have sort of said that they're somewhat open to the idea of there being third-party stores on Xbox, but that it's just not on the table yet.
Well, maybe it goes the other way and they make the next Xbox a Steam
Deck. Yeah, like maybe they if I mean that's That would be great, right?
Like, that would be awesome.
Like maybe they're looking at Steam and being and the Steam Deck and going, well, what if Xbox was a open platform? Like just with well priced good hardware. We can still make money on people buying the hardware. We can potentially by default get people into our store, but if you wanna go tinker, sure.
Yeah. And then you've got like they've got Game Pass, and then you've also got the whole Steam library potentially. That well, at least the stuff that works on Steam Deck, like through Proton.
Yeah, yeah. It's really
they that would be crazy.
They find themselves in a very weird place because of all these multi-platform moves. That's the thing. That's through all of this, they find themselves in a very strange position.
Sony are safe. Nintendo are totally safe. Switch 2, conservative, will go very well, I think.
Yeah, I just don't know with their... With Xbox's current messaging, I don't know how they come back, is the way it feels. It's like they can't now lock themselves back up again, right? That's...
No.
Game Pass still remains the best of the subscription services, and I still think it's great. But Game Pass alone is becoming less and less of a reason to buy an Xbox.
That's the thing. Surely it's easier to improve like PlayStation Plus software than it is to, you know, make.
Yeah, I mean, unless that's the deal they strike, that PlayStation Plus now includes Game Pass, like in the same way that EA Play on Xbox is a thing on Game Pass, right?
Yeah. Just seems like they haven't got enough control. Well, it's just too much that Sony could just shut them down. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Tricky. It's tricky to rock a rhyme that's right on time.
It is.
Tricky.
They put Game Pass on Switch too?
That's been the rumor, right? That's a strong rumor that Game Pass in probably Xbox Cloud, right? Let's be not right, native stuff. That like Xbox Cloud might turn up on Switch 2.
Play some Halo 2 multiplayer on your Switch 2. That'd be
as long as you don't mind that internet latency.
Yeah, wave of the future.
I just don't see there like everything is an Xbox campaign. I just don't see it. It's you know that they're putting all their ducks in the cloud.
The cloud ducks. They're out of the pond. They're up in the cloud.
The only water you're going to find is in the sky, my feathered friends.
Yeah. I really don't know. It's a really perplexing, like, what they're going to do.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's weird. Not too long ago that they were almost, you know, they were a bit behind, but they were basically level.
If they were like just modern day Sega, is that a bad thing?
No,
like if they just bailed out of hardware completely and became what Sega is today.
As long as they managed to make more games than Sega.
Sega have RGG, they're fine. They have RGG and Atlas, that is all they need.
What a world.
Mm.
After those huge moves of buying fucking Blizzard and Bethesda.
But that's the thing. That's such a... Well, the Activision purchase, at least, is such a... That's a multi-platform play, right?
Yeah, of course. It always was.
It always was, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's presaged the whole thing.
You're right. It's probably they don't have a choice, maybe.
Mm.
And if there's anything else anyone wants to add to the pile, that is my news.
I mean, PlayStation Network was completely down for like 14 hours yesterday.
What a surprise.
So, I mean, maybe...
Normal PlayStation
maybe
Network.
Maybe putting all your eggs in that basket isn't the best idea. Although maybe if Game Pass was on PS5, you could use that instead.
Maybe. No, you'd have to log into your PSN account to get any online capabilities.
Well, you could. I was at Gary's, and you could log into the console, fine, but you couldn't. You couldn't download anything. You couldn't play online, and you couldn't download anything.
Sure, Game Pass was on the. Oh, right. Maybe it would. Maybe it would work. I don't know how like services like Netflix on PlayStation function. Do they still need to go through your PSN account in some way?
Yeah, the only other news I had was that Civ 7, I think, is out, and it's got getting the usual response to a new Civ game that
kind of.
Well, it's officially out in a couple of days, stuff. But the early reviews are coming.
I guess there's an early access of 2 weeks or something. That's why everyone's talking about it. So maybe it's only the people who are obsessive fans who
was it pre-order or an edition bonus or something?
Yeah, something. It's definitely the public has got access to it, but I think it's like. Kind of. Why would they do that? Because 2 weeks isn't enough time to.
That's just what always happens, isn't it? It's like people who buy like the gold edition of. They did it with Forza, I'm sure. It. You buy the big bundle box and you get it like a little early, yeah.
Or they're just doing just standard like influencers type thing. Just give it to certain people.
Mm. I think that's what's happening.
I'm the Civ guy.
But yeah, it seems like it's hard to cut through the noise, but it seems like it could be a good base for the future, you know, as. Potentially.
Well, maybe. Like, one review that I read was complaining about like, they've simplified the base game too much beyond, like, taking everything out, as they always do.
Mm. I did hear that, like, UI is so simplified that it's hard to find some of the stuff that you actually want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough, isn't it? Because I can see the, like, board meeting logic, right? It's like, oh, we need to streamline this further. We need to get a larger audience than we've ever had before. And it's like, and then I'm sure like the other members of the team are like, but what about the guys who actually like Civ and want to actually play a new one? It's like, aren't we completely alienating them? Aren't they just going to carry on playing Civ 6? It's like, no, they'll buy it, whatever. And it's like, well, they might.
They probably will.
That might be true.
They probably will. I saw somebody saying it's so simplified, it's like a spiritual successor to Civ Rev. But I don't know if that's true.
I made that joke off air before we were talking to you. Yeah, is it?
Probably more like Beyond Death.
What was that other one? What was the Microsoft one? Ara?
Yeah.
Yeah, is it?
That came and went, didn't it?
Yep.
I don't think anyone sure cared about that.
Weird, isn't it? It's just like anything that's not Civ that tries to push in that camp is just never talked about. Humankind, is that another one? Is that Sega's one?
Yeah.
No one talks about that.
I mean, it was...
People like those weird Anno games and stuff, don't they?
That's different, though. That's not like Civ, really. I mean, the only one that has succeeded is like Stellaris, obviously. That's the
Stellaris, yes.
That's the one game in the Civ genre that has actually managed to succeed.
Yeah, that did break through. But that is... I mean, it's different in a number of ways, but... Yeah, I guess, maybe it's more similar than I think. It's just different set dressing.
Well, yes, obviously.
That's the news. What have you been playing? One of you.
One of us.
One of you. Go
One
on,
of you.
Well, mostly all I've been playing is a bunch more Station Ears again, as I hinted at earlier. We're getting towards the end now. The classic multiplayer situation where it's like, this is going to fizzle out at a certain point.
Mm.
And coincidentally, or not coincidentally, I suppose, we're building rockets, as you do at the end of these games, except not quite, because in this game it's not like the rocket is like the end goal or anything. It's like the rockets are just a thing that you can make, basically, to... You send the rockets to like mine asteroids, essentially. So it's just a resource source. That's the reason to do it. But then, like, there isn't really an end game in this game exactly, because it's still early access, I suppose.
Mm.
But yes, the rocket system seems to be like the peak of the complexity, basically, because you're essentially. It's kind of fancy because it uses the same like. Piping and wiring and stuff. It's just that you have to build it inside the limited space of the rocket fuselage, so you're still using the same components, but now you're having to like cram them into this extra confined space to actually make a functioning rocket.
Finna factory,
kind of. And then because we're on the lava planet where it's super hot during the day, it's like, well, we can't pre-mix the fuel, because if you pre-mix the fuel and it heats up, it'll just auto-ignite and nothing will explode. So you have to keep the fuel and oxide separate in two separate tanks inside the rocket instead of having it be pre-mixed, which then takes up more space. And also, apparently the rocket's default fuel tanks aren't insulated for some reason. So you have to use the regular insulated tanks that you would normally build elsewhere, but those don't store as much as the special ones for rockets.
Mm.
So it's like our rocket might have a kind of limited range because of this. Because you could solve it the other way.
Sort of just implying that you shouldn't do that. Like,
well, the other solution would be to like pre-chill the like fuel and oxidizer, store it in tanks near the rocket, and then like pump it in quickly just before you're about to launch.
Yeah.
So it gets mixed, but doesn't have enough time to heat up. But yes, this rocket is, you know, as a first rocket, it's all very like, there's no automation to it. Like, you have to manually drag a tank of fuel over to the rocket, to the launch pad, and like manually wrench it on there to put the fuel in.
Can you not program that?
Well, yeah, you can, but like, this is a test rocket, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. We don't even know how it's actually going to function yet, because we haven't worked out how you get it to go to somewhere specifically. Like, we launched it to orbit and we got it back down and it didn't blow up. Right. So success, I guess. But like, we haven't worked out how you get the telescope. I think you have to launch a rocket with a scanning device in it into orbit, and then that pairs with the telescope on the ground to give you like accurate orbital data for an actual target that you can send it to. Hmm. Something like that. I'm not the one doing this, though. I'm building like automated mining and getting into plant genetics, which is kind of the end of the plant side of the, not really tech tree, but available technologies. Except plant genetics is, like every game that I've played with plant genetics in, which might actually just be like several Minecraft mods, but every time someone does it, it's always the same, where it's just like, it's you make your plants more productive, but then like that's it. It's like, it's not really that interesting, and there's not much of a mechanics to it, especially if you're just relying on, you know, random mutation.
Is that... Do you reckon that, I always wonder about things like that, where it's like when everyone does a mechanic the same way, whether they're just, they've seen it in something else, I mean, yeah, and just possibly. Like whatever, whether it's possible for people to actually just spontaneously go away and think, I'd like a plant genetic system in my game. How am I going to implement that? And they just happen to do it the same way.
Well, that's also possible, because I think the problem with all these plant genetic systems that I've ever seen is that there's no real reason to do it that much, and at this late point in the game, because you need like the high tiers of alloys to be able to make the plant genetic machines and all that stuff. Obviously, you've had plants for ages, and you could, if you wanted to spend an unnecessary amount of time and effort, like do basically manual genetics, where you just rely on the random mutation, sample every plant as you harvest it, take the ones that have good mutations, and then only replant those, and then use the other ones for the actual resources you want or whatever. You could do it manually and just rely purely on random genetic mutation, but once you get to the point where you could actually intentionally choose a gene that you want to like destabilize to make it mutate faster, and then like, if a gene turns out to be good on a specific plant, you can splice it onto a different plant.
Hmm.
So currently we're basically trying to breed like better ferns, because the ferns are when I talked about the oxygen water loop thing before, where we'd like, you feed the plants the CO2 and then it turns it into oxygen, and then you take the oxygen and you burn it into water, and then that creates more water, so it's like a positive feedback loop or whatever. We could theoretically make that even better by changing the genes on the ferns to like consume less oxygen and, oh no, consume less water and produce more oxygen, and maybe grow quicker as well. So we've been looking at that. So those are the couple of genes we're trying to manipulate, but it's just like, does it matter at this point? Really, we could just grow more ferns. And then, because it's a positive feedback loop, it's like, all you're really going to save by doing all this genetic manipulation is space, kind of. Because you'd have to grow less plants for the same output. And it's just like, in most of it, it's just like in Minecraft, like, space doesn't matter. Just grow more.
Just spread out.
Yeah. I mean, it's slightly inconvenient in Stationeers, where it's like, obviously we have to build an extension to the building that has to be vacuumed out and then repressurized and all that stuff. And the more area we're enclosing, the more heat we're absorbing from the outside or whatever, dealing with our air conditioning system.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just like, at this point in the game, and this genetic system is you know, that simple. It's just like, it doesn't seem, it seems like a lot of time being spent for not that much of a bonus. Right. But then I don't think there's a way you can balance plant genetics to make it make sense in that way, to make the effort have a reward that isn't insanely overpowered, basically.
Sure, yeah.
Got to be gradual improvements over time.
Yeah.
Maybe it just keeps getting better. Like, there isn't a cap, but there must be. Maybe it curves off, right? So the initial benefits are quite strong, but then,
well,
you can still gain. You can still make gains, but those the rate of what's the word? The diminishing returns.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's just like, I remember back to when you do these kind of things in the Minecraft mods, when you've had genetic systems in those, where it's like, instead of having 9 plants that make 1 of whatever their fruit is each, I'll just have 1 plant that makes 9. It's just like, this is incredibly overpowered, because then you don't just have 1 plant that makes 9, you have 9 plants that make 9.
Yeah.
Especially in Minecraft, where obviously the plants growing doesn't even actually like consume anything. It literally only takes up space. Mm. There's no water consumption or anything.
It's a freebie.
So yes, I guess in this game the genetic system is slightly more balanced in that way, in that you are actually saving resources by making them consume less. But yeah, that's kind of, we're probably coming towards the end of that game's run, I suspect. There's still that game being in early access is a problem of like information again. And also, apparently, as from what I can tell, like, this game started getting updates more frequently quite recently, which means that like basically a lot of the information sources are out of date, which includes the in-game like wiki information and the out-game wiki. Like, both of them are like, don't like, the information on them doesn't line up a lot of the time, and often both of them are wrong anyway. Like, this information is old. And there are a few cases where even sometimes the tools that they give you in-game to be able to extract the information directly doesn't work like you would think. Like, there's a tablet thing that you use to like get information, basically, so you can like see what's in the atmosphere, see the pressure, that kind of stuff. And one of the functions of that tablet theoretically is meant to tell you the power usage of a machine when you look at it, except, well, you can, there's two different like modules you can put in this tablet, where one of them will tell you the power that's flowing through a wire, essentially. So if you look at a wire, it will tell you how much power draw is going through it, and it will tell you all the different machines on that. And then there's a different one where you can look at the machine directly, and it will tell you all the information from that machine, which you can, that's sort of designed for the automation system, so you can see like all the data that you can therefore pull out of that machine to automate it. So one of those things is like the power usage, except a lot of the time those numbers don't actually function correctly. Like, the one on the wire sometimes doesn't update on each of the individual machines entries, but it will give you the total usage on the wire correctly, so you can sort of work it out from that. And then when you're looking at the machine directly, sometimes that one doesn't update correctly either. Because the problem is that a lot of the machines have like an idle power usage and an active power usage. So like, the in-game wiki information only ever tells you the idle usage, which is completely not useful, because that's not what you care about.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one of those early access kind of information problems, where it's like, because it's only just started getting more frequent updates again, no one's updating the wiki, so that's fallen behind. But then, because they're doing because the programmers of the game are doing the updates, they're not updating the in-game information either, because they're too busy doing, you know, the actual programming stuff, not updating information. Not UI, I suppose. So yeah, that's that game. We've continued to play it, and I experimented with a couple of the other different planets to see, you know, how annoying they were. Like, going to Europa, where it's the oxygen, the atmosphere is pure oxygen, which is great, apart from it's like minus 140 degrees. So you can't really just use that. You have to heat it up somehow.
Mm. burn it. Burn some of it to keep some of it.
Well, yeah, that's what you could actually do, is just like mine up some of the volatile ice and then stick it in a furnace with the oxygen and then just ignite it, and then that'll create a lot of heat. Although the way I did it, because I was trying to work out what's the fast way to do it, because I was playing on like regular start difficulty, not brutal start difficulty, where you have much less stuff. So I was trying to figure out like how would you theoretically do this on brutal. Like, one of the ways I was experimenting was, like, I think even in Brutal, you do get, like, a stack of flares for the... they're kind of pointless on any of these... any mode. Like, I think they might be a sort of remnant of an older version of the game where lighting was different. But you get a stack of flares. But, like, if you light them up and put them in a big pile on the floor, they do generate heat. Oh. So you just light up 20 flares and just put them in a big, like, bonfire, basically.
Yeah, sure.
Which is kind of...
Why wouldn't they?
Kind of dumb. But yeah, I fiddle around with that. But yes, we might be mostly done with that. And then the other thing I played since yesterday, which was slightly after it released, I played Rift of the Necrodancer, because that came out.
Woo!
For real. And if you thought that game was already complicated from looking at the demo, get ready for even more things, because there's even more different enemies.
Oh boy.
And a new enemy to be the worst possible enemy now, after red zombies.
Right, yeah.
They've been outranked by red harpies. Because you remember how the harpies move like every other beat, but they move two squares?
Yeah.
So they go... Vroom, vroom, like, it's... That's fine. But red harpies just move two squares every beat.
Oh.
So they're just faster than everything, which means they can overtake stuff that's already on the screen, which makes it just really fucking hard to read.
God. I get the idea this game's probably quite fun in easier difficulties.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been playing it on medium, and like, I got about probably two-thirds of the way through the track list before I started failing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is still pretty hard.
Yeah, you want a little bit of challenge.
Yeah.
Don't be wrong. Like, it's nice to fail in a rhythm game. You don't want to succeed everything.
But then when I got to that point of, like, the first time I failed a medium song, I just randomly decided I'd go back and, like, play all the songs up to that point in hard just to see. And it's like, I managed to finish, like, one of them. And I think the one that I finished was one of the songs from the demo that I already kind of knew. Obviously, that helps. But yeah, I was just like, these are all fucking real difficult.
Yeah. Like, a lot of these things, like, the patterns are learnable, I suppose.
Yes.
But I don't know if I want to be... Honestly, I don't know that that's how I want to play a rhythm game.
Well,
I don't know that I want to learn how to... You know, like a musical instrument, I don't know that I want to learn how to do this. I want to... And memorize how to do this.
That has been a thing in amongst the reviews, where it's just, like, people from more traditional rhythm game view have been like kind of saying that they don't like it much because it requires, you can't just sight read. You actually have to memorize patterns to some extent. Although I have also seen people complaining that they would prefer it to play the music. But I feel like that is what this game does. Like, if you're following the actual rhythm of the music, that is the pattern.
Sure, surely that's.
But you then have to also be able to read them the first time, but then you just learn that. Like,
isn't that the whole point of a rhythm game? You know, not just on beat, it has to...
Well, yeah.
The pattern has to be for the music.
And I feel... I don't know, a couple of cases of that I saw in videos, it felt like they were only complaining about that because they were playing it at too low a difficulty, where there are more gaps in the rhythm pattern, because that's how you lower difficulty.
Yeah, of course.
But then if you can't understand the higher difficulty well enough in reading it, because you would, in the higher difficulty, you essentially would need to like go into practice mode or whatever and look at each individual bit to get the pattern.
I think it is still possible to achieve having the pattern with lower difficulty, especially in Rift, right? Because you just don't combine certain enemies together, right? Like, then you've made the same rhythm easier to read, and that's where the difficulty is, not necessarily in the execution.
Yeah, somewhat.
The reading is as much the game as it is the actual pushing the buttons.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that's why, you know, people are like, don't judge it based on standard like rhythm game rules. Don't assume that you're just going to be able to sight read it, because it's not that's not what they're going for exactly.
No. Which,
or you can learn to sight read it, but it will be more difficult to do. You're not just going to hit the buttons as the arrows arrive and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that as why that would put off some people.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it puts the idea of that does put me off a little bit. I want to be able to sight read it, or at least learn to sight read it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that barrier seems pretty high here.
Yes. I mean, I feel like from my going through the medium songs, they are definitely, I feel like they're trying to push you to get better faster than maybe a normal rhythm game might. Like, they right. definitely don't mess around with like dropping you into a really high BPM song pretty quickly.
Hmm.
Admittedly, it's more high BPM so that they can have like half notes that aren't half notes, essentially. Like, you'll be playing the regular rhythm on every second beat of the track, but then it'll occasionally put in a half note, but it's not visually a half note in the Necrodancer way, if you see what I mean. It's not moving in that half note way that they do.
A bit swingy, you mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a third note or...
Well, no, I mean... Because you remember how when the enemies are moving down the track, the half notes... It's like the animation is offset because they're moving literally half of animation step off.
Mm-hmm.
But if the BPM is twice as fast, you can have essentially half notes, but they're all still moving at the same speed.
Sure, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because you're just, they're not playing that extra note normally.
You're, the entire score is
double speed, essentially.
Semi-quavers, not crotchets.
But you're not playing them all. There's just the occasional one.
Not semi-quavers, it would just be regular-ass quavers.
Yes. But yeah, they do that, and, you know, that works, I think, to acclimatise you to faster speed earlier. And then, you know, you play the story mode and you get the stupid, goofy mini-games as well, which are pretty funny.
Yeah, cool.
There's not many of them. There's only, like, five, I think. Five or six. But, then, you know, it's pretty funny.
Breaks them up a bit.
I don't really like the boss fights as much. Well... And also, I haven't tried them in hard, but it seems like hard is really... The boss fights in hard seem like way harder for some reason. Well, not for some reason. So in medium, the idea of the boss fight is you dodge and then counterattack. And in medium mode, it changes the way the game works to be more like... I don't know what game, Elite Beat Agents maybe, where it's like closing rings tell you the timing.
Mm-hmm.
So it works like that in the boss fights. So you have a pattern of dodges you have to hit, then you get your opening to do your counterattack, essentially. But in hard, it gets rid of the indicators for the dodging, and you have to do it visually on the actual boss animation. So when the boss is going to attack to the right, they'll animate their, like... swing to the right and then it will hit you, so you have to dodge that actual, you have to visually read that rather than it being like a note icon, essentially.
Right, so you're sort of doing the opposite of what you're doing before. You're avoid rather than is it more traditionally Necrodancer-y, is that what these boss fights are, in that you have a position?
It's basically like Punch Out.
Right,
like if the swing is coming in from the right, you dodge to the left, and if it's
gotcha, so you're not dancing around the arena.
No. It's just from behind the back, essentially.
Gotcha.
But because it's...
That's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. But like, as I say, with the difference between medium and hard, it's like a massive change. Because you're... In medium, you're looking at these icons. Whereas in hard, you're actually looking at the actual boss animation.
Oh, you don't get the icons.
No, you don't get the icons.
I see.
And actually,
So it gets more punch out, is what you're saying.
And actually, kind of, I also had the opposite problem where in medium, the actual boss animations were making it difficult to focus on the icons. Yeah. So it's like, you're kind of screwed in both directions in that system. But yeah, those boss fights are a bit weird. But again, not many of them, and it's only a tiny part of the game comparatively to the actual music tracks.
Yeah, they sound like a neat thing to add as an alternative to the standard. You know, to its stand, whatever you would call it, its grid format.
Yeah. And then there's a couple of There's a couple of even more ridiculous options. If you're just going into, like, if you're out of story mode and just doing, like, playing the tracks, you unlock the remix mode for every track. And the remix mode is fucking ridiculous because it randomizes the enemies.
Wait, what?
And it does it, like, actually intelligently as well. So it's like, if there's, like, two green slimes in a row, it could replace it with a blue slime, which takes two hits. But then if there's, like, a green slime and a space in a green slime, it can replace that with a blue halfy, because that's the same pattern.
Yeah, I guess all it
needs... like, hit, pause, hit.
I guess all it needs to know is... here's where the hits are.
Yeah,
I'll put anything in to make that, as long as they're like, because I guess two things can't occupy the same space. That's the only rules it has to go by. Like, as long as it can figure that out.
Yes. So you basically have complete randomization where it's just like every time you play it, it's just completely different enemies.
Man, that sounds tough.
Yeah.
Because then that throws the whole learning thing out of the water.
Yep, it's pure reading at that point.
Just, well, is it? Is, well, it's like, are the notes still actually in the right place? Yes.
So if you've learnt the actual whole pattern of the song, if you've memorised the actual rhythm of the entire song just purely without even visuals, you could just literally just hit those buttons in the same order and it would just work again.
Right. Yeah, okay. So this...
Well, actually,
I guess all it's doing is it's just cementing what this game is that it's more of a memorisation thing than a...
I'm not 100% certain that's entirely true, because I think some of them can get, like, moved which arrow it is.
Right. Oh, okay. So
it's not the exact same literal button presses.
That would make more sense, I think, to make this a different enough mode. But
there is a limit to how much they can do with that, because if it's, like, a triplet, obviously... I mean, not a triplet, a free button press, obviously, that's still going to be a free button
still
press.
Be that, yeah.
And, like, hold notes can only be worms, so those are always still the same.
Sure.
But yeah, that's fairly ridiculous. And then there's the one more special option, which is obviously the only one that Rob will care about. When you're playing the regular songs, there's practice mode, and then under that, shopkeeper mode.
Oh, damn.
So you can just have the track with the shopkeeper doing his ridiculous singing over it instead.
That's... I'm glad he got his place.
He has, like, a character design and everything, but I haven't seen if he turns up in the actual story yet.
Oh, okay.
He's in the challenge mode, which are, like, little mini challenges. So he's, like, the MC of that, I guess, but I haven't seen if he's going to turn up in the actual story as well.
Oh, that's neat. I'm glad he's back.
Yep, he's back.
Yep.
With his ridiculous... I think maybe they've... made it too ridiculous now, though, because it sounds even less like someone singing than it did before. No. Like, there's too many notes going on now.
A little bit like the Fifth Element opera singer, you mean?
Yeah, kind of.
Too many notes.
But yeah, the music is totally awesome, and there's a couple of new tracks in there that I really like. That I've come across that, and also I just sort of fun to play as well. One of the early ones, which is kind of easy, but where it's just fast and it's just single notes the whole time. But it's just like you just play this entire track constantly with the rhythm. It might as well be like a Cadence of Hyrule track by that way, where it's just like nothing but single button verses. You just do the whole track.
Man, you know what I'm now thinking, like. This game might be quite fun to map to my MIDI controllers.
Well, like, I've definitely seen people playing on something like that.
Yeah, on a beat pad.
Yeah.
Just, especially with that one with single notes, you want like having a big pad surface to just go ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da on.
Yeah, exactly.
Like with two hands.
And I've still been playing on default controls, like the arrow keys. I've been having the problem where I don't remember to release hold notes well enough. So then I'll try and push three arrows at once and then that doesn't register. Because obviously Windows doesn't allow that. So I'm like, should I move that on to... Would that work if I was on, like, letter keys?
Yeah. Or move to a controller.
Well, yeah, or learn to do it on controller. But then I'm like, learning to do it on controller is that you need to commit to that as early as possible before you muscle memory your way into doing it fully on keyboard and you're like, oh, I'll have to start over again.
I have to say, like, it's been a while since I really sunk my teeth into a proper rhythm game, right? I guess the last one was like, okay, it's eight, maybe not the last one. There's probably others in the way. But I'm reminded of Thumper.
Yeah.
Right? And how I mean, I like that game quite a bit, but it made it click for me when I played it on my fight stick.
Right.
So the combination of the harsh stick movements with nice fat buttons to press to do the stuff. It's like, I'm getting that vibe here.
Yeah.
Like that maybe it may be a good fat buttoned controller is the way to do this.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I've still been considering not just moving away from arrow keys onto like some other keys, but like also the idea of going properly two handed on keyboard, not like I would do it on a controller in the frequency style, but yeah, I don't know. I am getting better at having spacebar not completely bone me when I try and push it. So I can fit that into the river better now to trigger the vibe power.
That.
But yeah, that game is cool. Definitely cool.
Cool.
Dope.
I don't think anyone has said dope yet. I was just trying to remember whether anyone has said something along those lines. One of the characters does do a dab at a certain point.
Of course.
Okay. Slightly behind then.
Yeah.
The times.
Dab's coming back, man.
Really, we bring back dabbing.
Bring back the dab.
Well, you've been dabbing, but what have you been playing, Rob?
Well, speaking of the dab, actually, that's quite a decent segue.
Somehow.
Well, Forza Horizon 4 has a dab in it.
I'm sure it fucking does.
And I had that for a while assigned to my character. I mean, I've been playing Forza Horizon 4. Don't really know why.
After I was talking about it earlier.
Yeah. don't really know what drew me back to it. I guess I, like...
Well, you do. It's the fact that we've been talking about it in the news for the last, month or so.
Yeah, a little bit. But, yeah, and it's probably the one I put the least amount of time into out of the more recent, I guess, well, since 2. I never played the original, but I think it's the one I put the least amount of time into, which is weird given it's, you know, the whole England thing. Yep. And I thought it's like, and I always thought that would be the one.
One was Colorado.
That was the
two
first.
Two was like Italy, is that right?
Two was Europe? Yeah, middle Europe, sort of.
Three
France.
Is Australia, is it?
Three is Australia, is yeah. Australia. Four is
UK.
England, Scotland.
And five is Mexico.
Correct.
Mexico.
And you know, a lot of people say that 4 has the best map. It's like, I'm not so sure about that. It's like, it's got, I mean, it's nice that every now and then seeing a low bridge with all the markings on it, and like as you go under a railway line and you're like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I mean, that's not what a good map means. That's
no, there's some you know, stand-up moments. It did confuse someone who's not a game player. Saw me playing it the other day as I was driving around in an old school Audi Quattro. And saw a British motorway sign. They're like, wait, what? Where are we? And it's like, well, we're nowhere. It's like, it's a sign pointing to an M road that doesn't exist. But the fact that it was England was sort of threw them for a moment. It's like, what do you mean they made a game of it in England?
That used to be more common when we were MSR and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was that. Yeah, just sort of went back to it. I think, because I didn't necessarily... I don't think I gelled with Horizon 5 either, particularly. I think I just have a problem with some of those, how those games actually like present their challenges. Like, yeah, and I think I'm starting to understand more and more what I don't like about those games. I like that there's a whole bunch of cars. I like that there's a big map. I like that there's a whole bunch of stuff to do. I don't like their social media things. I don't like how much they talk to me and how that's like unskippable and unturnoffable. But the problem actually boils down, the problem in a lot of events is simpler than that, I'm starting to realize. It's like that there's an awful lot of like these like canned challenge. I think Forza Horizon 4 probably has more than any of the others, where it has like these little challenge things. So there's like a Top Gear, I think they call them the stories. There's like a Top Gear story with like 10 chapters in that are like, you go do things from Top Gear. There's a taxi service story where you go do this taxi storyline where you're always driving a London cab in the missions, and you actually have to stop at the end, crazy taxi style. I think that's the only real difference there. there's a stunt driver one where you're having to do some slightly more interesting driving for once. I think there's more of those in 4 than I remember in any of the others. The problem is that with a lot of these challenges, it always seems to boil down to, well, a great deal of them can be undercut completely, it feels like, by just going off-road and driving in a straight line to where it's telling you to go.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just ignore the road, just point in the compass direction and accelerate and try and dodge a few trees on the way. And it's like, that is the quickest way to get to where you need to go. And they're like, that is a problem to me, because it seems like the challenges are actually just like the star ratings for some of these challenges are just skewed towards you doing that. And it's like, no, someone has gone to the effort of making us drive these specific bits of road in an actually sometimes quite interesting ribbon, right? Somewhere I might not have been on the map yet. And it's like, no, this is actually kind of cool to drive this properly. And it's like, no. If you want those 3 stars, you're going to have to ignore all of that and just drive straight across this field. Go.
But does that mean that that's what they figured, that's what the programmers did when they were doing it? Like, when they were making the course, did someone make the whole, like, specific path you have to drive along and then be like, well, I'm going to set the best time by just driving in a straight line because I know how the game works. And it's just like, that's dumb.
I think that's what happened. It's like, because a lot of the most of the racing events do set up like regular checkpoints around the course, right? Where you have to drive between these 2 flags or 2 flares at regular intervals. I actually think that's bad as well. The courses should be kind of well constrained to be a course, because again, there's plenty of places where there's a, even if the gap isn't very long, right? There's still that impetus to just be, I can just drive in a straight line between those 2 places.
Yeah.
And it kind of, it feels like the Horizon series of games as they stand now is constantly undercutting driving well. And maybe that's why they're popular.
It's kind of sad though.
Yeah. Which is kind of why I thought I would be more into Forza Motorsport than I am. But now I have the opposite problem with Forza Motorsport, in that if I'm going to play that game, I want to really play that game and challenge myself and do it well. Mm. And I just don't have the time for that or the patience. It's like, I can be interrupted at any moment most of the time. And Forza Horizon is a great game to play if you can be interrupted at any moment and you don't care. It's ideal for that. Also, I kind of just want to put some more time into Forza Horizon 4 so I can feel justified about playing the 2 DLC packs that also I got on the cheap because of it going off store. One of those being the Legos thing, which visually looks really nice.
Oh, nice.
Also, you know, Forza Horizon 4 on Series X, you know, it's running at a lovely stable 60 the whole time. I don't think it's running in 4K. I think it's lower than that on Series X. Don't forget, this was a last-gen game. And I had originally played it on PC with the wheel, I should point that out. So I'm doing it with a controller here. And it's like, yeah, it obviously loses something not playing it with the wheel. But it's all right. You know, it's fun just to dip into for a short burst here and there. I'd like to just make a little bit more progress. I don't know that I've ever seen credits on Forza 4. I don't know what the trigger for that was.
Yeah, that's one of those problems with those kind of open world games. It's like, where do the credits randomly show up?
I seem to remember finding the trigger for the credits on Forza 3, Horizon 3, pretty quickly. Like, it just happened. Like, I think you just have to get a certain, maybe do one of the really big events and it triggered it. Right. Like, you get to the end of a progression on one of the disciplines, do its big event, and then that was it. That was what triggered creds. I've definitely done a big event or two in Forza 4 and that hasn't triggered it. So I don't know what I'm missing there. I haven't beat it, I suppose.
Well, I mean, the credits trigger thing is kind of dumb in those games anyway.
Oh, yeah, there's so much content in them that it's like, there's almost too much content in them.
They should really just like put it in a specific, like, event chain. Just be like, this is the credit sequence event chain.
Yeah, the story.
Play this if you want to see the credits.
Yeah. I think Forza Horizon needs to find a way to make me care about what I'm doing a little more. Anyway, there's that. What I should really be talking about is it's that time of year.
Oh, good. Coming in your yearly run.
Oh, yes. I am many, many hours deep into Yakuza 6 Song of Life.
Whoa. It's time.
It is time.
Okay. It begins.
And do you know this game came out in 2016? Jeez. So it's set in 2016. And the game...
It's a period piece.
It's a period piece, yeah. And it immediately opens with, boy, the way Yakuza treats time is weird, right? Like, so in theory, this is approximately 10 years after Kiryu thought it would be a good idea to start an orphanage, which is still one of the weirdest sentences like in the game in some ways.
Okay. I mean, no weird in the movie. No,
yeah, there's plenty of weird in Yakuza, but yeah, he's like, but
I mean, turning into a pirate next time.
Yeah, I might come back to that as a point, but it, like, so in theory, roughly 10 years have passed since he did that. But I don't know. Those kids don't seem to have aged 10 years. I should put like that.
They're different kids that look exactly the same.
They do look older. Okay. They put some thought into that, but it just seems like not enough time has passed. And the same thing seems to go like with Haruka's age. Does that mean Haruka was 9 when he's like, she seemed older than 9 because she's 19 now in this. It's weird. Anyway, I guess try not to think about it. Like, the time scales in Yakuza don't make any sense. Kiryu must be in his 50s.
Yeah, like, exactly. He's like, he's been around since the 80s.
Yeah.
And he's been important since the 80s. It's not like he was a kid.
I guess he must have been barely 20 in Yakuza 0, is how I'm figuring this out. Because and in Yakuza 1, don't forget there's a 10-year time skip at the start of Yakuza 1. Yeah, it's it's weird. Yeah, Yakuza 6. A couple of things off the bat. I should point out, when this came out, this was the first of the games to use the new Dragon engine. So over the previous games in the series, Yakuza 0 and Yakuza 5, this is a fidelity bump. Like, it looks nice. The lighting is way better than it was in the previous ones. Yeah, camera aperture at night is particularly interesting to look at now because of how everything pops. That is bolstered by the fact that Microsoft or someone has put some work in to make Series X do its thing, right? So it has auto HDR, so it pops even more than it did originally. It's also got FPS boost because the Dragon Engine limited the game to 30 FPS when it first came out. So on Series X, someone did the work, and this thing now runs at 60. So thumbs up.
Wow.
It doesn't break the physics or anything.
It doesn't break, no. Okay, there are a couple of moments where you can see it frame drop, like it's not perfect, but it's pretty much a locked 60 most of the time, which is great. So it's better than it originally played. I don't know if that's true on PlayStation. I don't know if that ever happened on that side. Obviously, if you play on PC, you're fine. Do what you want to do. No limits there. I know I'm behind the curve, but it's a pretty good looking Yakuza game as far as I'm concerned. I'm having all that same buzz that I get about moving to a new chronological version of the game because I'm in, you know, I'm walking around Kamurocho going, ooh, that's changed. Ooh, that's changed. They finally developed the theater into some lovely theater looking thing.
An actual theater.
Yeah. You know, there's elements to Kamurocho where you're just like, yeah, okay, time has passed. It's that always strikes me as cool. Like, you can complain about the area being familiar and you returning to it a lot. That has never been a problem with me. I like picking up on the differences. However, that also makes it where the cutbacks are far more obvious. So, even if you're just walking around Kamurocho, for some reason, they decided not, like, maybe this will open up later in the game, but at the moment, inexplicably, one of the pathways you just can't get access to. Like, the whole top line of places on the map is gone. Like, I mean, they're there, I guess, but you just can't walk past it. There's like some construction happening again, like the big construction things out, which makes me go, but I want to check out Camarocho Hills. I want to check out what the whole thing, right? What does it look like? What is that now? And it's like, they didn't, it's not there. It's like, it's not part, like, you can't go there. And that also sort of like, there's things like that all over the place. Like, so there's no multiple fighting styles in this one. Kiryu only has his one fighting style. Kiryu is the only playable character, as far as I'm aware. So you're not even branching out into Majima Land or anyone else, which is, again, given that they were was there five playable characters in Yakuza 5? That was a lot. That was too much. Mm. Don't get me wrong, I like being Kiryu more than anyone else in these games, but even Kiryu feels cut back. In this one, I think there's only two main areas in this game. There's a new town called Onomichi, which is a small fishing village in Hiroshima, fishing and shipbuilding, I guess, village in Hiroshima. And there's and Camarocho, obviously. So the number of areas you're going to is smaller than it has been in the previous titles as well. So it's, you know what I mean? Yakuza 0 only had two. But you know what I mean? So I'm feeling that a little bit. Mm. And that's not just... And it extends to all kinds of stuff. Like, I've not seen an equivalent of Purgatory, like the whole gambling area. And I haven't seen anything even remotely like that here. You can't bowl anymore. There's no bowling.
Oh, is that in the north area?
That was in the theatre square, sort of, yeah, north, northeast of the map.
What's there now?
I mean, the bowling alley's still there.
No, you just can't
bowl. Just can't go in it.
Disappointing.
So, yeah, there's definitely some weird, like, I guess this was because of a new engine, they probably did have to actually make a whole bunch of stuff again, maybe. And so maybe they hadn't built up their repertoire yet. I mean, and it feels, it kind of has a particularly weird feeling to me, because obviously I've played Yakuza Kiwami 2, because I played chronologically, right? I played in story sequence. Kiwami 2 came out after Yakuza 6.
Yeah.
And rectified a lot, almost everything I've mentioned.
Okay.
So I'm playing the building year, I guess, in terms of the Yakuza games. And it's...
Does that mean you're going to get through it quicker? Is it actually smaller?
I actually think I might, yeah. I think it feels like I'm progressing through it quicker because there's just less side stuff to worry about. The side stuff I have found hasn't been hugely compelling. So it has clan creator mode as one of its big side gimmicks, which is, I don't know, to use the term strategy is a bit strong. But it's like you've got a street, you've got to get up, you've got a certain amount of ticket points, and you can use those tickets to summon dudes. That's pretty much it. Like,
it's like the Fort Condor in Final Fantasy VII.
pretty much, yeah. It's not far off, just without the branching paths. Well, that was more tower defense.
Yes, that was the other way around. Yeah. The enemies were coming to you.
And I think that's what they did with it in Kiwami 2. Clan Creator was there as well, but it was expanded, and it was... Mm. I think it was more of a defense game there because you were defending Majima Construction.
Right.
Whereas now you're just sort of beating up a gang called Justice. Ironically. and it's pretty simple. It's pretty easy as far as I can tell so far. It's got some neat ideas. Like, there's a hierarchy system for your guys, so you can... even people you're not necessarily using in a level can still help you, because you structure a hierarchy and the people above them in the hierarchy get the bonuses from their own. You know what I mean? It sort of starts to stack, which there's some ideas there. It's just the actual game part of it is too simple. There's a baseball management sim, which is also incredibly bare bones and pretty...
It's got to be in a Yakuza game somewhere.
At some point, yeah, they had to do it at some point. Like, but it's not very well tutorialized. So if you're not like familiar with baseball terms, and they like, what's the word them looking for? They like acronym everything. Right. Like you'll hit the ball, and it will say, I don't even know what this is. It would be like LF3B will pop up on screen. And that means ball went to left field, but you made it three bases.
Right, yeah.
And so these little terms are popping up all the damn time, and it's quite fast the way the simulation plays out. And so it's really hard to get a feel for what is actually going on. But don't worry, you don't really need to care. All you really need to know is that the home run numbers are going up as you want them to.
Yes.
Maybe look at the like your team's like form indicator, which can either be good, bad, or middle. That's it. So maybe you step in to swap a player out at times for someone else. And also pretty randomly, as far as I can tell, it will make you hit the ball. Every now and then it'll just be like, by the way, we've still got home runs, we've still got the batting in this game, so we'll make you take a bat every now and then.
Right.
Okay.
And I haven't quite figured out what the pattern for that is. It just makes you do it every now and then. It's weird. And I don't really it just doesn't feel as well fleshed out as some side stuff I've done in the past is here. I don't know if the cabaret game is in that. I haven't really had much contact with cabaret clubs yet, so I don't know how those games play out. One of the first side quests I encountered was the story is pretty heavy. There's not a lot of levity to the story this time around. I should say generally the tone in the game is less goofy than it has been this time. Right at the start of the game, you find out that Haruka's been in an accident, and it's about Kiryu trying to piece together what has happened to Haruka while he's been in prison again, taking the fall for some of the mischief that happened in Yakuza 5. He wanted a clean slate. He wanted to, he's like, I'll do my time, and then I'll come back, and everything will be fine, right? I'll be able to run the orphanage, and we'll all have a happy Yakuza-free life. And of course, the moment he gets out, none of that is true. Haruka's been missing for like most of that time, and seemingly now has a child, and it's all a bit complex and all a bit like this is heavy. I've got to sort this out, kind of stuff. It's not a goofy tale at all. Apart from the very proper, I think the first sub story quest I came across in Kamurocho was, hey, have you seen these chat rooms where the ladies get a bit strippy? And it's like, Kiryu's always got time to be a horn dog, as it turns out.
Yeah,
naturally.
It was like the very first thing, side quest that was thrust upon me. It's like, do you want to talk to some ladies? Is this? Yeah, some of that is still there. I'm kind of hoping maybe I'm back in Kamurocho now after not being there for friggin' ages. It's like that maybe some of the goof comes back in. Some of the side stories have been kind of interesting in how they've written, but they've never really amounted to you doing anything particularly interesting, which is a shame. At the end of the day, it's still Yakuza. It's still all right. Oh, I think the plotline is almost identical to Yakuza 3 in some ways. Like, you go off to this, like, if you remember Yakuza 3, and I can't blame you if you don't, that's the one where you first go to Okinawa, coastal town, slightly smaller scale Yakuza operation. You get embedded with a family who are, only a few members strong. That exact same thing happens in Yakuza 6. So it's like,
But in a different place. but not in the Tokyo place.
No. In the other town. But like, there's an awful lot of similar beats going on here in terms of the actual story, which is also not really as satisfying. But hey, beat Takeshi's there, so actual beat to Takeshi to Kitano, like he's actually there. So there's that. It's still a good game, right? But so far, other than Yakuza 3, this might be my least satisfying one.
So your number one place to start is still Kiwami 1?
Kiwami 1 and 2, for me, they're still top tier. Both of those first Kiwami games, those are the benchmark. I know people the Yakuza community still has a soft spot for Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very good one. But for me, yeah, Kiwami 1 and 2 are the stories are just the most interesting in those. The twists are so crazy. Like, I guess because it's got the Kiwami badge on it, they do not feel afraid to go absolutely wild with it and the setting. That's not to say that, Yakuza 1 and 2 weren't quite wild even without the Kiwami badge. So, yeah, those two are still by far my favorites.
But one day you'll catch up and you'll play the one from last year, like a Dragon.
Infinite Wealth does sound like the maddest in the series so far. But hey, there's Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii still to come. There's still time.
There's still time.
I'm having a good time, is what I'm trying to say. But it's hard not to have a good time with one of these games. It's just perhaps those highs aren't where they once were. Maybe I'm getting too used to it. Am I oversaturated? But even though I'm playing them like one a year, am I oversaturated? Do I need to wait for my hunger?
Do you feel oversaturated? No.
No, I could keep going. I want more.
Yeah, I can't. I'm all tight.
Anyway, I think that's the majority of what I've been playing because it's just really been that. And you know, I've been still hitting Balatro every now and then, and
of course.
A little bit of Proto Corgi on the side. I unlocked my spirit animal so I can do whatever the hell he does, but I don't. I still don't know. I don't know what he's useful for. I can do the thing he does, which is like the spirit animal comes out of you a bit like an option and then starts throwing punches in front of him. That doesn't seem as useful as my guns, so I'm not quite sure why I would do that yet. I think there's a part in one of the levels where I might need him to unlock the secret in that section, so I'll figure out if I probably need to run the training for that area a couple of times so I can actually pull it off in the middle of a run. So there's that. Also, randomly, just because I hadn't used it for ages, I played some Beat Saber. And I did do the thing, like, there was one level where it was just like, I don't know how you're supposed to read this. I'm actually going to put it in training mode and slow it down and see what it's asking me here.
Hmm.
And it's like, oh, I like when you slow it down, it's like, oh, I can see the action they're trying to encourage me to do. And it was get the saber, hold out in front of me and do a circle sort of swish, but it's only really represented with downs and ups alternating, and I couldn't really see that at pace. So it's like when I slowed it down, it's like, oh, I can see what you want me to do now, and it's like, oh, and suddenly that level makes sense. Anyway, that was all I did in VR. My quest isn't broken from whatever happened.
It's still fine.
It's not bricked. It's still fine.
That's the key.
And that's me.
Nice.
Oh, I went and did the final puzzle on Indiana Jones as well. And I went and sorted all that out. Don't bother.
Don't bother. don't bother with the extra.
You get an incredibly tiny tease, which I think is for some upcoming DLC that tells you next to nothing. And the achievement didn't even pop for me, so, you know, screw it.
What?
Yeah,
there's an
achievement for to do the last puzzle. You need all the what's referred to by the game as the ancient relics. You need all of them. Well, that's not true. Apparently, the puzzle is solvable. I had to look it up afterwards. Apparently, the puzzle is solvable without all of them. It's just easier if you have more. And I'm pretty sure I've got all of them as far as the game is telling me. And the achievement is tied to getting all of those, not solving the final puzzle. So the Chivo didn't pop, but I think I've got the right number of them, or I had the right number of them to have them all. So, yeah, I don't know. It was a waste of time. I shouldn't have done it. But I did, because I quite liked Indiana Jones, so there.
Yeah. All right.
Bit of news I forgot to talk about.
Go on.
While I'm remembering.
News at the end.
So, you know, we recently did a video of Star Fox 64 Starship.
Yeah,
of course.
Another team has thought, I know, we'll do that to San Francisco Rush.
Really? After we'd done a video on that emulated?
Yeah. So there's, well, yes, I don't know how long Project R, as it's called, has been going or how long it's about. But there's basically a I think it's a recomp anyway, where you feed it the arcade assets for San Francisco Rush, The Rock, Alcatraz edition.
Oh.
And it makes it playable on PC. Or on Linux, or on Mac. There you go. This is your public service announcement. You can now play that game on just fine.
Go play San Francisco Rush, I guess.
Yeah,
and we might make a video of that, I guess, in future things.
I've got it running. I haven't actually played it yet, but I got it running on my machine.
Nice.
Well, it does look very smooth, because I don't know if you remember the original. That game was not very smooth in the arcade. There was like a 30 FPS 3D effects midway game, like Hydro Thunder, I guess.
Yeah,
but even ropier looking than Hydro Thunder. Very early PC 3D acceleration looking thing. There's like no light in that game. Everything is just like lit the entire time. There's no shadow. Shadow's not a thing in San Francisco Rush. Anyway, yeah, you can do that. You can do that. News.
News. Yeah, so if you want to check out our video of Star Fox 64 having given that treatment, it's on our YouTube channel, Happy Salad. And also a San Francisco Rush emulated. And maybe in the future, that new recomp version.
Yeah, we played 2049, didn't we? The Dreamcast version of 2049. Yeah, 2049. Emulated. So, that's on the site.
And in future, we might get that Alcatraz version, the arcade version running. But in the meantime, we're doing a Let's Play of Star Fox Adventures, following on from Star Fox 64, the natural next step.
Yeah. The obvious sequel.
The Star Fox franchise. Clearly in exactly the same vein as the other Star Fox games. not like a weird UK rare RPG with dinosaurs at all.
And absolutely no confusion.
No confusion at all. So definitely check that out on our YouTube channel. And
one episode at the moment. Second episode will be next week,
coming up soon. And we'll be back in 2 weeks for another one of these podcasts. So we'll catch you then.
Whoop, whoop.
Goodbye.